And we're back here on 93.3 CFMU FM. And as I was saying before that track, I was going to be interviewing Mohamed Boujanon, and he's the executive director of the Canadian Arab Federation. He's someone who has been to the Durban 2 conference that everyone's talking about. This is a first for the program, as we haven't spoken with anyone at this current conference. So let's see if we have Mohamed on the line with us. Mohamed, can you hear me?
Yes, of course.
Oh, excellent. Okay, you're coming in clearly. That's excellent. Well, we did speak with Ali Mala, Vice President of the Canadian Arab Federation, last week about a few issues, but it's really a pleasure to speak with someone who has been there. I guess the first question that comes to my mind, and probably a lot of people, is were you able to see the Iranian President give his speech?
Yes, I did, actually. I was in the audience with President Ahmadinejad deliver his speech. Of course, that speech was used and misused by the media. Played in the hand of the people who weren't interested to participate, who were expecting or waiting for any reason. And the speech was used for that purpose, to provide more excuse to the people who have negative perception and weren't not interested in participating in the Durban conference. The speech itself, quite frankly, when you read it, has nothing that can be perceived, described, or reported as anti-Semite or negative towards Israel. The speech, of course, referred to some racist policies by colonialist countries. The speech refers to the politics of Israel, or I should say the Zionism, as way of, you know, dominating one group of people and stripping them from their rights. And the speech reflects, in a way, the international laws and international covenant. Now, because it comes from someone who is so controversial, and I should say maybe inflammatory, that speech was used by many media and also, as I said, government who weren't there from the first place to demonize against that process of that conference.
Well, you mentioned the walking out of a handful of countries and the way that people that aren't even there, did not even go there, used the speech to demonize the president. So do you think that this was staged, you know, in a way that people were ready to condemn the president of Iran no matter what happened?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, without doubt, people were ready to condemn this conference before even going to it or even giving it a chance to be able to work, in spite with the censor. That was imposed on the organizer, in spite of the fact the document itself was stripped from almost everything that was having any reference to the state of Israel. The people from the beginning who weren't interested to face the music. And the reality is the many government who refuses to participate, including Canada and United States, are government with a great guilt when it came to racism. Those government took the advantage of this so-called controversial Israel issue to not, respect their own commitment towards fighting racism, either the treatment of First Nation in Canada, the black community in the United States, the Arab and Muslim community in many European countries, and so on and so forth, or the legacy of slavery. So for those many countries to claim that they refuse to participate because Ahmadinejad or because reference to the state of Israel as an apartheid state, it's just like a very convenient excuse.
Well, it sounds like you and a lot of other people came there to discuss a whole lot of issues. There's a lot of different racisms that are going on. So even though a few of these countries left, were you able to still address some of these important issues?
Well, absolutely. I think let's put these things in context. The people who refuse to go and participate or boycotted are less than 5% of the planet population. So this is not the international community turning its back to this process. This is a few countries. Of course, they're the most powerful because economically they're the one who control the almost the economy of the planet, and also they're the one who control the big weaponry like United States. But that have been said, this is not the international community. This is states with, you know, legacy of colonialism and racism. But the people who were there indeed tackled many serious and important issues. And as I said, the recognition of indigenous rights, the issue about reparation, and talking about the historical legacy of the slave trade issue, the problem of the Dalit in India, the Roma and the Sint in Europe, and so on and so forth. And of course, the Islamophobia, the anti-Arab sentiment after 9/11. And parallel to the conference itself, we also had what we call a civil society conference, where more than 400 NGOs across the planet came together to talk about racism and ways to tackle racism. So in my view, this was a very successful conference, in spite of the effort to tarnish it, in spite of the incredible resource and mobilization put forward by the Zionist group to discredit this. At the end of the day, I think the people who went there and who participate come up with strong resolution and will to tackle this incredible crime in our society, which is racism.
How difficult is it to discuss the issue of Palestine? I mean, there was the first Durban conference in which people were trying to make resolutions on that. So what's the process that's involved here? What are the majority of these countries out of the 175 or so countries in the world? What's the general idea they're trying to put forth? What's the resistance here?
Well, I think the reality of the Palestinian people, it's a reality enshrined in the international law. I mean, the fact the Geneva Convention is not respected on a regular basis, the fact they are still occupied by foreign force, the fact their right to the land or access to water is controlled, the fact their own mobility is limited, the fact there's checkpoints in every corner almost of that tiny lands controlled by the Israelis, the fact there's thousands of women and children in jail, those elements are indeed a type and policies rooted in racism. And I think the international community is not duped. The international community knows that and was able to talk about it. Now, we have to say that the High Commissioner Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, which was the main organizer of this event, did everything to basically try to expel the Palestinian to hold what we call side events, because during the conference there were many side events and the Palestinian didn't have the chance to hold or organize anyone. So Badil, which is a human rights Palestinian organization, did hold a conference outside the premises of the UN where we had hundreds of people participating, including high-profile human rights organizer, jurist, and so on and so forth. So, yes, there were this attempt, as I said, to muzzle the voice of the Palestinian within the premise of the UN, but that voice was heard loud and clear outside, but also resonated with many delegation in the halls.
I see. So there were workaround solutions. Well, I mean, how did the people at all of these workshops and conferences and so on feel about the walkout of that small group of countries? And, you know, how do people adapt to that? You have those other special events happening. So is there a way to go forward even when there's people not participating?
Well, the walkout, as you said, was staged. The walkout was just a clear validation and confirmation of this divide between the North and the South. The majority of the people who walked out were from the European countries, except Norway and some northern countries, and of course East Europe. But and those people walked out just as I said to again discredit the president of Iran, but also to discredit the process. But they also validate the perception that they're not interested in tackling the real roots of racism that happens under their watch as a colonizer or is happening now within their own communities, where there is a clear divide between the poor and the rich, and usually those poor are either newcomers or racialized minority people, indigenous people, minority groups, gays and lesbian, and so on and so forth. So these countries who work out, the only thing they did, they send, as I said, a strong message that they're not interested to work towards fighting racism, injustice, and all form of intolerance. And I think it's shame on them, including Canada, who wasn't able to come and contribute. And let's also face it, like when we talk about the president of Iran, the reason why he spoke, because he was the only one who decided to go. And according to the international protocol of the UN, he was the only head of state there. So he had the right to talk. If we had another prime minister or another president, he will be also to talk. So they give the room to Ahmadinejad to say whatever he wants to say.
Right. So there was a definite boycott. I mean, I've said it before. It seems like the handful of countries that opposed this conference, calling themselves the international community, are almost the same countries that make up NATO. You know, and it's like you said, the countries that benefited from racism and colonialism to help themselves enrich themselves are the same ones that seem to want to control the discourse, want to control the discussion so it doesn't reflect and come back to them on the issues they don't want to discuss. So,
absolutely, and you're right. And let's not forget, I mean, people seem to forget history. The previous meetings or attempt to talk about racism, especially the one who were directed towards, for example, the apartheid state of South Africa in 1978, for example, and 1983. Also, those conferences saw a boycott by the U.S. and other European countries, including Great Britain and Canada of the time. But that doesn't prevent the international community at one point to realize that that regime in South Africa was a vil regime, was a crime against humanity, against the African people, and at the end of the day, that regime collapsed. So, Israel will also face the same fate. People cannot hide this crime and this abuse of human rights and this racism that is happening every day against the Palestinian people. At one point, they have to face the reality, and at one point, the international community have to indeed hold accountable the state of Israel of this behavior.
Well, what's going to happen if these G7 countries or these G20 countries continue to ignore the rest of the world, you know, the majority of the rest of the countries, and try to stay out of this or boycott it? Is this sustainable?
Well, let's face it, the rest of the world is also getting organized. I mean, the rest of the world now means China. The rest of the world means a powerful Brazil. The rest of the world means also many countries in South America who are getting organized and are opposing to this imperialist type of politics or Eurocentric type of politics. The rest of the world doesn't mean the poor and the weakest. There is, movement out there. And that movement at one point will create some balance. And maybe when we have a balance, people can talk, eye to eye.
Well, you said Canada wasn't there. What should Canada's role be in conferences like this?
Well, I think Canada's image, which is now quite tarnished, especially under this government and the Harper government, Canada was participatory of the first Durban conference in 2001. Canada was signatory of the document, who was basically the document who was revised and looked at in this particular conference. This conference is just a conference to review the Durban conference and to look at what kind of gain we made, what kind of measure we can put forward, what kind of strategy the international community should take to address the issue of slavery and racism and so on and so forth. So Canada was part of it from the beginning to turn its back to human rights, to social justice, and to the international community. It's just a misguided vision, and it's a very narrow politics. I mean, the politics of what we call the empty chair is not contributing to anything. By not being there, you cannot even address anything. You cannot even challenge maybe people who have certain extreme views and so on and so forth. And that's not Canada. Canada have this so-called soft power, where our credibility, image, and perception was a perception of country that is paramount of human right and inclusion and so on and so forth.
We are dealing in Canada, like George Galloway said, with a Bush dead-ender regime in some cases, you know, the last of the Bushites. And so you can expect a kind of conservative position here, in my opinion. But in the United States, we're supposed to have change because Obama's in. But, I mean, look at their position on the conference. Is there going to be change with Obama, or what does this decision they made represent?
Well, I think Obama is going to have to face the African-American community and explain its position. I mean, Obama was elected mainly and largely because the support of the black community. Obama was elected under the premise that he will address the issue of injustice, racism, and so on and so forth. And coming from a president, the first black president, who also have roots from Africa, not to be there or participate was quite shocking, to be honest with you, for many, many people. And the American NGOs who were there were quite ashamed of Obama's stand on this one. And I just hope he might change his position when now he realizes that this old boycott and so on, it's part of this hypocrisy of European countries and other countries who refuses to basically tackle the problem of racism or the historical legacy of slavery.
Well, I guess you're back now, so what do you think is next for making Canada relevant in the Durban Conference or bringing the Durban Conference forward?
Well, in our view, when I say our view, the NGOs and the civil societies, including the labor movement in Canada, we will continue the fight against racism and intolerance. This is an important fight for us. I mean, let's face it, there is, again, as I said earlier, more and more marginalized community in these countries. There is a historical injustice. There is a bigger divide between the poor and the rich, and usually the poor are part of those racialized group and racialized minorities. And we need to fight against this. So as civil societies, we will continue our involvement in this Durban process. And we are now thinking to put together a conference here in Canada to talk about the racism in Canada and try to take advantage of the Durban to apply some of those resolution and strategies to Canada.
Oh, that sounds exciting. If that happens, we'd definitely be happy to talk about that. Anyway, Mohammed, I'd like to thank you very much then for bringing us what actually happened inside the conference. It's the first time we've spoken with anyone here on that, and I don't think there's been other interviews in Hamilton like that. So thanks for bringing us from your eyes and your ears.
It was my pleasure.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Mohammed.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.